From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Oh, Pittsburgh, California.
Oh, I'm not from the Bay Area.
Pinole, California.
Pinole, California.
San Jose.
Coming up, we'll walk the streets of Oakland in the footsteps of the Black Panthers.
Now imagine Bobby bringing a copy of the party's program down the stairs and out to this pole. This is how the Black Panthers start.
Recognizing the 50th anniversary of the party. Then we'll fill our plate with the People's Kitchen Collective.
They serve breakfast free every day because they knew the political significance of bringing people together to eat.
And speaking of breakfast, we're gathering round the table to learn the story behind this week's Audiograph Mystery Sound.
I'm known in Oakland as Sherry Jean, the waitress machine.
Grab a seat. Cross Currents is coming up next. Saturday marks the 50th anniversary of the founding of the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. The organization was created by two students at Merritt College in Oakland, Huey P. Newton and Bobby Seale, who decried police brutality and economic exploitation. The group came to be known simply as the Black Panthers and included more than 5,000 members across the country at its peak. Beret-wearing Panthers drew media attention for legally carrying weapons openly in shows of force against authority, even on the floor of the California State Legislature. They organized health clinics and started a popular program providing free breakfasts for kids. We wanted to take the opportunity today to remember some of the legacy of the Black Panthers. To start, we've partnered with the audio tour company Detour to bring you to the streets of Oakland, where Newton and Seale started the party. We'll join Oakland resident Davin Anthony Thompson, also known as Doodat, at the corner of Market and 54th near MLK, to get a sense of what it was like back when the Black Panthers were an active part of the civil rights movement.
You see that intersection up ahead? It's pretty crazy at rush hour these days. But back in 1967, there wasn't a stoplight, and it was way worse. A couple of kids from Santa Fe Elementary were struck and killed by cars that spring. The community got a petition going and demanded to have a stoplight installed. The city said they'd get around to it. Well, some people didn't take kindly to that. They decided to take matters into their own hands. So one day, the school bell rang. These kids were booking up the block, weaving around these signposts, hopping off these walls, and they come face to face with the baddest crossing guards they had ever seen. Imagine this scene. Honking cars backed up in every direction, neighbors out on their porches, police cars pulled up on sidewalks, red-faced cops staring in disbelief. What did those cops see? Young Black men in leather jackets with crooked berets, carrying shotguns, escorting elementary school children across the street. These hip, strapped-up crossing guards were the Black Panthers. Black guys with shotguns directing traffic. That's crazy, right? Well, maybe. But in 1967, it was also legal in California. Huey P. Newton was a law student. He actually carried law books around with him. So when the police confronted the Panthers at this intersection, Newton would prove their actions were legal by quoting the law to the officers.
We are operating well within our rights. Now back the f*** up.
And what do you know? The city got that stoplight installed ahead of schedule. Huey Newton worked here as a community organizer with a guy named Bobby Seale. They'd been a part of all kinds of progressive organizations, but they were always disappointed. The intellectuals weren't from the street, and the activists didn't see the bigger picture. So Huey and Bobby formed their own group right here at their day jobs. They used the center's library to write a founding manifesto. They called it their 10-point program. Now imagine Bobby bringing a copy of the party's program down the stairs and out to this pole. Fresh ink, damp on the sheet. Imagine him nailing it to this pole in full view of the intersection where those kids had got killed. This is how the Black Panthers started. They were going to change the world. Here's Bobby laying down those 10 points.
One, we want freedom. We want power to determine the destiny of our own Black communities. Two, we want full employment for our people. Three, we want decent housing fit for shelter of human beings. Four, when the end to the robbery.
Merritt was where Newton, Seal, and some of the other Black Panthers learned up on Black intellectuals. It was also where they started their community organizing. Now, in 1967, the street wasn't called MLK yet. It was Grove Street. And this was Merritt College's Grove Street campus. There weren't any BART tracks here either. BART came along in 1972. When Oakland's tracks were built, the city bulldozed hundreds of homes, most of them belonging to African-American families. And who was it that put up the displaced families? Who fought in the courts to get them relocation expenses? Yeah, the Panthers.
That's Davin A. Thompson, or Do Dat, in excerpts from the Oakland-based audio tour about the Black Panthers. It's been repurposed with permission from Detour. You can take the extended tour yourself, right where the Black Panthers once walked. It's downloadable on your phone. Find out how at klw.org. Click Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. At its height, the Black Panther Party fed tens of thousands of school children every morning across the country. Today, the People's Kitchen Collective in Oakland carries on the free breakfast program tradition by providing free, hot, nutritious breakfast to people twice a year. Last Saturday, the People's Kitchen Collective set up their tables in Oakland's DeFirmary Park as part of the Life is Living Festival. KLW's Meredith Hodnott was there to record the event and the thoughts of the people who run the program. Jocelyn Jackson, Saqib Kaval, and Sita Koratomi Bamik.
On the prize, don't be dismayed. Don't be dismayed. Deep in your heart, you must believe everything is gonna be all right today. Blessings, everyone that are here, that's here. Thank you so much. We start our meals with a blessing because it matters, because our ancestors knew how to sing their freedom into existence. Yes.
So People's Kitchen Collective is it's a collective of chefs and artists and activists, and we exists at the intersection of food justice and food service, but also art and community organizing.
In serving a free breakfast program to honor the legacy of the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense and their revolutionary free breakfast program that they started 50 years ago this month.
They serve breakfast free every day because they knew the political significance of bringing people together to eat. Specifically bringing youth together to eat a healthy meal every day. And that was dangerous. The FBI, the head of the FBI said that the free breakfast program was the most dangerous domestic threat to national security. Because eating breakfast and being healthy was dangerous to the state, and it still is. That is why we have food deserts. That is why we don't get access to healthy food in our communities. And that is why us coming together to eat a healthy meal and eat breakfast together is still a revolutionary act.
The reason why it is so powerful is because when a child especially is fed, when they are full of a good hot meal, they are also full of the ability to liberate themselves and to find self-determination in a way that's simply not possible when you are hungry.
People's Kitchen is really about drawing on this legacy of the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense and thinking about how is it that we can actually nourish and sustain our communities.
You know, we do this on an incredibly small budget, and we do it all as volunteers, so it takes a lot of food costing and math and planning to have a organic meal using local ingredients that's seasonal and also culturally specific, and replicating kind of the menus of the free breakfast program from the research that we've done.
And today we have grits, greens, scrambled eggs, and scrambled tofu, and these delicious sweetheart biscuits that are actually heart-shaped.
Sweetheart sweet potato biscuits. There you go. A little extra one for extra love.
Being able to speak with everyone as they're going through the line.
Thank you.
It's really a powerful experience to feel the positive impact of what we're doing in real time.
I will not bow down to racism. I will not bow down to injustice.
I think overall, my favorite part is the Young Gifted Black Poets. When the poets get on the stage, then I know, like, oh, we are at the breakfast. Because these youth poets, like, they are, you know, I feel like the perfect representation of the free breakfast program come to life and the Black Panther's original work around the free breakfast program doing youth-centered, you know, food work.
That piece was recorded by KALW's Meredith Hodnott. The People's Kitchen Collective brings free breakfast to West Oakland twice a year. Find more information at KALW.org. Click Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Now, we're going to hear more from one of the People's Kitchen Collective members we just met, Sita Koratomi Bamik. She describes herself as an artist, a chef, and educator, and her artwork often uses food to celebrate and investigate culture and identity, especially around people of color and immigrant communities. While much of Bamik's work has been about bringing people together, her newest art installation is about an idea meant to keep people apart. Trump's proposed wall between the United States and Mexico. Her show is called Estamos Contra el Muro, or We Are Against the Wall, and it's up now at the Southern Exposure Gallery in San Francisco. Bamik has put up a wall made of cinder block-shaped piñatas. The wall will be smashed at a closing reception this Saturday. KALW's Jen Chien spoke with Sita Bamik. They started by talking about her work with the People's Kitchen Collective.
Based in Oakland, I think the legacy of the Black Panther Party is just everywhere, and it's both so invisible and so felt by us. And part of what we're really interested in thinking about is cultural survival and how food, you know, can nourish us, not just on a, like, how many calories does it have, but, like, how does it really nourish and sustain culture? And so what the Black Panther Party was doing in their programs was thinking holistically about, like, health and wellness and police violence and so many different issues that are still part of our reality today.
And for you, how do these breakfasts connect to that in the modern day?
I mean, one of the things that's little known about the Black Panther Party is that it was because of their nationwide feeding of young Black children before school so they could concentrate, have a nourishing meal in the morning. The U.S. government actually co-opted that program, and because of them, we have now free and subsidized meals for school children all over the country. We approach it as a political education project in terms of bringing to light, like, what are the roots of that opportunity that many of us had as school children, and what are those radical roots, you know, in something that is just kind of a given today.
Your current show, Estamos Contra el Muro, or We Are Against the Wall, it tackles a lot of subjects and through the metaphor, the image of this border wall. Now, that's something that's gotten a lot of attention this past year as our Republican presidential candidate Trump has been trumpeting this idea for a while. But talking about borders and walls is not something new to you or your art practice. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a bit more about that?
Yeah, one of the really interesting things, and I didn't realize how much I work with walls previously, and not always border walls, but many of my previous works are spice installations that you could actually smell. So you might not recognize it as spices, but it looks like a wallpaper installation. Or I've embedded things in the wall, or I've had a project where I, you know, serve food like out of a cutout of the wall. And there, I'm always thinking about the periphery and the border and the limits of like what makes one space one thing, and you know, and who is welcome into that and not.
The wall in your show is made out of piñatas, mm-hmm. and they're shaped like gray cinder block mm-hmm. bricks. When did the idea of using piñatas as bricks come to you?
So I was working with a media collaborative based in Tijuana, and they were working with piñata makers. And so originally, I thought, okay, this show's coming right up before the election. I feel as an artist that I have a responsibility to address this incredibly racist, xenophobic rhetoric that's happening. And what can we do about it? And I was just kind of thinking about what different types of craft and existed. And so the piñata for me is this perfect form because it exists to be destroyed. And so if I'm going to build something that I don't think should even exist in the first place, you got to make it out of something that's not meant to last. And then the other interesting thing, this is something my mother told me, is that piñatas, when she was growing up, were actually made of clay. And they were not a birthday thing. It was a Christmas, part of a Christmas celebration. And it represented the seven deadly sins, the seven cones on like a spiky traditional piñata. And you smash it to reject evil. And your reward is this candy and the sweetness inside.
That's so deep.
Like, yeah, it really is. And I was like, that is really a perfect metaphor, because for me, this reinforcement of this existing border wall is such an ugly idea. It really is another deadly sin to me.
Mm-hmm. I'm speaking with artist Sita Kuratomi Bomek. So as we've been talking about, this wall mm-hmm. in your exhibit is made out of piñatas, mm-hmm. is going to be destroyed during mm-hmm. the closing party. Can you talk about what's going to happen?
As with most birthday party piñatas, I'm going to line up the youth from youngest to oldest, and they are going to have the first shot at this. It's really all about them and about the legacy that both good and bad that we are creating and leaving for our next generations.
There are some artists who use their art as a way to escape the world or the culture that they come from. For me, you seem to be an artist that's digging in deeper mm-hmm. to where you come from personally, but also to bring people in mm-hmm. to a sense of broader community and in collaboration mm-hmm. into a present moment through the work you do with food. It seems like a very humanist viewpoint to me. Does that resonate mm-hmm. with you?
Whew, yeah, I think that art is at the service of this, again, like this excuse, like to bring folks together, you know. And sometimes we do that by buying and selling things, or sometimes we do that by having a meal together, or sometimes, you know. And so this project has really been about like, how do we across all, you know, as people who make things, whether we make food and we make, you know, street art or piñatas, there's a really interesting connection that all of us have, and is that every person in this show makes things that are not meant to last. We all make things that are meant to be destroyed. And so what does that mean, you know, as people of color, as cooks, you know, as artisans, like that's kind of built into the work. And I think it is about that cultural preservation in a different way of thinking about it. Like, how is it that we continue these things in a lived way?
That was KALW's Jen Chien speaking to Sita Bomek. You can see her exhibit Estamos Contra el Muro, or We Are Against the Wall, until this Saturday, October 15th, when the gallery invites people to come destroy it. For more details, head to KALW.org and go to Crosscurrents.
When they blew the horns, when the walls came down,
and now it's time for Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. Here's KALW's Julie Kane.
All week long, we've been playing you this sound.
Do you want change for your five?
I'm known in Oakland as Sherry Jean, the waitress machine. and also known as the Apron Lady.
Think you know what that was and where we recorded it? I am so excited for you to hear the story behind this one. KALW's Bonnie Chan tells us more.
Do you want change for your five?
My name is Sherry Jean Cooper. I'm known in Oakland as Sherry Jean the Waitress Machine.
It's a Saturday morning at Mama's Royal Cafe in Oakland, and Cooper is in the middle of her shift. She's waitressed here for 36 years.
I am a career waitress. And when I get up to go in the morning, it's showtime to me. It's showtime.
Today, Cooper's wearing a necklace with charms that spell out Oakland, California, and her waitress earrings. Dangly earrings with a miniature fork, spoon, spatula, and creamer. She has a pink flower in her hair that matches her shirt. And also, she says, her underwear.
No one knows that I got a pink bra, pink Gandhi, pink bows, and no, it's a liberty. It's a liberty.
The cafe, as it always is on weekends, is packed. But Cooper says she has so much waitressing experience, she can hear a piece of silverware fall on the floor even when every table is seated. And without looking, she can tell which table it dropped from.
I could tell if it's fork, knife, or spoon that hit the floor. Four needs a fork, and one needs that, and seven needs that.
Mama's has been serving up the same recipes for decades, and serving some of the same customers for that long, too.
And we love, love, love their breakfast.
June and Greg, whom I find waiting outside for their names to be called, are longtime patrons. They live near Lake Merritt and have made a ritual of walking to Mama's for breakfast on weekends.
We always get the eggs and the hash browns and the wonderful toast and the delicious strawberry jam, the best I've ever eaten. And their eggs are always perfect. Greg, what do you want to say?
I want to say you're right, darling.
Customers love the food, and they love the ambiance. Sherry Jean Cooper's vintage handmade aprons decorate one of the walls of Mama's. She changes them out seasonally. A tiny one that Cooper crocheted has her granddaughter's name on it, Dahlia. On another wall are dozens of napkins displayed under plexiglass. They're winning entries from past napkin art contests, where customers submit their napkin doodles. Though doodles might not be the right word. One of the napkins depicts a pen and ink wolf so lifelike, it looks like it's keeping an eye out for customers' bacon.
Everyone at the restaurant who worked there always said, this is a movie. This is totally a movie.
That's napkin doodler and professional artist Mimi Pond in a KCRW interview talking about her experience working at Mama's. She wrote a graphic novel called Over Easy, based on her time working there in the late 1970s. Here she is reading a selection about when she was first hired.
Wait! I've never washed dishes before, but I'm very responsible. I'm a hard worker. You won't be sorry. Frank turns and looks at me like I'm nuts. Looks at Laszlo, shakes his head, and goes through the double doors. I stare at the doors flapping back and forth. I'm in. I'm no longer an art student. I am a dishwasher in a coffee shop. Nothing could sound better to me.
I just feel that people like to come here, feel that it is part of the community.
That's George Marino, who's been the owner of Mama's for the past 42 years.
Now I have people coming in with their young children, who used to come in as young children with their parents.
Before Marino took over, the space was a Chinese restaurant called Royal Cafe. And the hints of that old restaurant are still there, in the form of a decorative pagoda on the wall behind the cash register.
There wasn't much money to upgrade the decor at that time. I mean, we pretty much left everything the way it was, and it still is the way it is.
Except for the aprons and napkin art, of course. And some other things are about to change. In July, Marino announced he is selling Mama's so that he can spend more time with his wife. He's 68 years old, and he's been running Mama's for 42 years. He says customers have, for the most part, been really supportive, though also a little panicky.
People are always coming in and want to know when we're going to close, and we're not closing. I think there's a rumor going around that we're closing, but that's not happening. We're just trying to sell the restaurant. I'm trying to sell the restaurant and have it continue on.
Marino isn't selling the building itself, which he'll continue to own. He's selling the business. And he's in no rush, so he's looking for a buyer who will work to keep the spirit of Mama's alive.
I'm obviously going to really miss coming here every day. That's going to be a transition that's probably be... I've kind of made my peace with that, but I think it's going to be a little difficult, and I hope that this business goes on.
When Marino retires, it sounds like Sherry Jean Cooper will too.
What are your plans? Are you going to retire?
I assume I friggin' will, but I'm going down with the ship. That stuff may take a year or so, but I go with the ship, and I'm bloody well old enough to retire.
Hopefully, at least her aprons will stay. In Oakland, I'm Bonnie Chan for Cross Currents.
Thanks, Bonnie. So many of you are Mama's Royal Cafe fans. We got a lot of calls. Our winner this week is Chris Orr, who knew not just where we recorded, but who we recorded. Sherry Jean, the waitress machine. Nice job, Chris. We're going to send you a KALW t-shirt. Do you have beloved spots in the Bay Area? Give me a call and tell me all about them. 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. We might just record there next. Thanks so much for listening and thanks for playing. I'm Julie Kane.
Thanks, Julie. And that's all for us today. Our team includes Josiah Luis Alderete, Jurgen Clem, Leela Day, Olivia Henry, James Rollins, Angela Johnston, Greer McVeigh, Ted Muldoon, Lisa Morehouse, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, and Andrew Stelzer. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. The line producer was Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.